All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Wednesday, August 8th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Big Game Davis.
And we are here to talk a double slate of action on FanDuel and DraftKings. We've got an afternoon slate going off somewhere around the 2 o'clock Eastern hour, and then obviously the 7 p.m. Main. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Head on over to the site and get a free 3-day trial of our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. It's optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. MLB, NFL, FanDuel has the pricing up. We have the projections up, and we're just working out the kinks of adding that new flex position. But the projections for week one, very early, are up. DraftKings calculating lineups already for week one if you want to go take a look at that. We're also recording a special PGA podcast today for the PGA Championship, the last major of the season. So Chris Durrell and I will jump on and do that. So look for that in your feed as well. A lot of stuff happening here. DFSR.com will get you started on everything you need to know to get going. Baseball, golf, football, it's all covered in the one subscription package. So go check it out. DFSR.com/MLB. All right, buddy. We'll talk the early slate of games. You claim this was, quote, the easiest slate ever.
Yes.
You don't often hear that from someone like you who's just a...
Well, all I do is complain about how there's no pitching, there's no hitting. That's like...
You were singing a song about how there was no pitching on the late slate, and we can talk about that. But you don't need to go through the...
I think it was a song about how the late slate is absolute garbage, so we'll see.
I can't remember all the lyrics. It was like real catchy. It was like more of a hook song where I wasn't into the lyrics as much as...
I'm really heavy into the verse, you know? I like to go deep on the verses.
For sure. So why do you think this is the early slate is the easiest slate ever? I generally agree with you that the picks do seem to stand out as pretty stark against who the good plays are and who aren't. But is there a way you can summarize why you think this thing does line up? I mean, lines up pretty well on the outset, knowing that we don't have it all lineups in yet.
Well, yeah. So for starters, you have a pretty limited slate of games, right? You have just four games here. Because I noticed that on a lot of sites here, you're not going to get that New York Cincinnati game. And so if you're just talking about the Seattle Texas, Pittsburgh Colorado, Philly Arizona, and Detroit LA game, then I think it just the picks right themselves at that point, right? You have precisely two good pitchers in reasonable spots here. They're facing each other, but you get Corbin versus Velasquez in Arizona. So you talked about the humidor yesterday. Arizona, much friendlier place to pitch this year. And these two guys, I mean, Corbin, second in the majors in XFIP. Velasquez, no slouch in his own right. And your other options on this slate are literally Marco Gonzalez, Yovani Gallardo, Archer in course, Marquez in course, Blaine Hardy, and Jaime Barria. So... Isn't that just pitcher one and two on DraftKings?
Basically, I mean, I wrote up Corbin for obvious reasons. He's been awesome. I think we've been ahead of the curve with him this season, especially on the strikeouts. Like we've been more just based on ownership percentages when we played him, as opposed to the rest of the field. Are sort of always been overweight on Corbin, mostly because made a determination early on that not after the first game, but after the first few games, I thought the strikeout stuff was that kind of there to stay. Just been doing some work and looking at like what the pitching profile had been as opposed to previous seasons, and he's just maintained it. He's just maintained 11 strikeouts per nine basically for the whole season. Now the last two games have been rough for Corbin, but they weren't. It's funny, they're rough in an earned run aspect. He allowed 7 earned runs in the last 12 innings, but he got BABIP to death. I mean, he had 375 and 412 BABIP. The left on base percentage, it was all happening wrong for him. Like the left on base percentage and the BABIP were combined, so basically everyone that was getting on base was scoring. Essentially, is how that breaks down. But he still struck out 16 batters in his last 12 innings. Good matchups, obviously, against the Giants and the Padres. I very much believe, and I have for a long time, that what the changes he made in reducing the fastball and upping the curveball are working, and it just maintains every game after game. The strikeouts are there. I think you'll see him as a chalk pitcher. I think it's most people that have even been late to the party are going to be on him now. And you mentioned Velasquez. It's not the best strategy to take in GPPs because you are going to knock off the win. Because obviously they both can't win the game. But from a cash game perspective, getting Velasquez with his kind of K rate in the 8,000 range is kind of exactly what you're looking for. Even though the Diamondbacks aren't the best matchup in the world, he's striking out over 10 batters per nine this season, and has been able to go at times long enough in the game because he's been able to actually reduce some of his walk rate over the last two seasons. I kind of ran out of ways to write up the Mariners guys. Like by the time I hit third base or the outfield, I just was like, I mean, you get it, right? Like we just have to play all the Mariners here.
That's what I would do. Basically, sight unseen, no matter how many games on the slate, who they're facing, I'm just going to roll Mariners now. That's how I'm rolling.
Well, it has become a theme that, you know, in Arlington, I don't want to call it the new Coors, but it's kind of like, it's kind of playing. It
the
plays
lines
that
would
way.
Suggest that it's the new Coors. Yeah.
Well, it has the weather in its favor because it's hot as hell there, and the ball just flies better when it's got that hot and humid, just over the heat. But also the Texas pitch, you combine that with the Texas pitching staff. I mean, they just roll out a guy every single. So something, I know some of like the.
It really is a who's who. Martin Perez, Giovanni Gallardo,
Bartolo Colon. Every single night they just trot out a new loser. Gallardo's the worst of the bunch. He is awful. This guy should not be in the majors anymore.
Yeah, he's like Bartolo Colon's low strikeout rate, but if you added 3 walks per 9.
Right, and just like a worse hard contact percentage. Like, he just, everything about this guy, he is so damn bad. Now there's a pitcher that I think is actually worse pitching today. He's going on the late slate, so we'll wait a little bit. But yeah, 5.7 Ks per 9, 4.4
walks.
That's
a teaser, Doug. I'm scrolling. I'm trying to figure out who that can be.
He can make claim that he's running bad on the ERA. The ERA is a run and a half. The 6.5 ERA is a run and a half higher than the 5 XFIP. So I guess like he can maybe sitting there just thinking,
shaking his head, walking to the dugout. So unlucky.
He's like, damn BABIP.
Well, getting BABIP to death, coach. I should have only given up 4 runs in 6 innings, not 5. What a joke.
You and I talked to each other too much because I was going to say the exact words BABIP to death. Then I was going to jinx you, and then we're going
to
have...
Well, you said BABIP to death earlier.
Oh, there we go.
And okay. So I took it from you. And then don't talk about jinxing. I thought about bringing that up on the podcast to make fun of you, but it's actually just too embarrassing. Let's just move on.
Oh, well, our family spent a lot of time...
You're a 40-year-old person who jinxes people. That's the thing I want to point out.
I jinx my daughter.
You've jinxed me before.
I did jinx you when we were away.
You have jinxed me before. In the last 6 months, you have jinxed me.
Oh, whatever. My daughter loves playing it, so we roll a heavy jinx game. We've established a lot of rules about jinx in this house, mostly because my daughter's an angle shooter and she tries to get you. But I stick with it.
Your daughter's 21, by the way. Not a lot of people know.
But I stick with it, and I've gone long bouts of silence before someone says my name 3 times. All right, I think we're stacking Mariners here. I think you can throw in some of the Rangers guys as well. Even like, I know they're getting the lefty. The park is so good. Even Chu at the top of the lineup is fine enough against lefties that you can consider. Beltre, struggling a little this year, over the last 2 seasons, though, has been awesome against lefty pitching. So, it's a little weird to kind of, you have to work in some age regression for a guy because he's like 40 years old or whatever. I still think that he, in the middle of the lineup, is a good spot. So, I think you're basically...
Isn't Marco Gonzalez just kind of good, though? Like, this is the one issue I've had. Vegas has hated Marco Gonzalez all season. The guy's got a flat 8K per 9, not amazing. Sub 2 walks per 9, 3-4 XFIP. He's no bum. I mean, he's pitching in Texas here, and I guess that's where the bump comes from. But, like, I don't know. I feel like a couple of times I've seen his name, and, like, my instinct is like, oh, that guy probably sucks because he wasn't very good last year. Right. And then when I go to double check to see if I actually want to play people against him, I don't feel excited. So I'd rather take the Seattle side here if I had to choose one.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think that we worked it, or the picks were like very Seattle heavy. I didn't really write up any of the range. I'm saying if you're just filling out lineups, they do have the third highest run line, but they're not priced like the guys in Coors. Because like in Coors, you're getting a weird thing here because you're getting Archer. Coors gives you a lot of runs. If you have like a guy who's a well above average pitcher, like, or just a very good pitcher like Archer, the price difference on what you're getting in terms of the implied runs almost doesn't make up for it. And German Marquez, he's been fine enough that I don't think you're getting a great situation for the Pirates either. So it's mostly they're just so expensive. If they were all the same, if those guys were all the same price as the guys in Texas, I think we'd be talking about them wanting to face them more than against Marco Gonzalez. But I think it's just because you're working into the price factor. And then we kind of like knocked off a game in the Philly Arizona because we thought both those guys were in good pitching spots. You know, the last guy we want to take a look at targeting Angels guys against Blaine Hardy. The Angels problem is they stink. Like the Angels guys, like just up and down this lineup without, especially because Trout's not there. Now they still have a decent implied run line. Trout, I do not think he's coming back until the weekend, so he's not projected to be in the lineup today. But Darren Fletcher hitting leadoff, that guy's, he's horrible. Justin Upton has crushed lefties over the last couple of seasons. He's been so bad this year against lefties, and it doesn't even look like a thing where he's like running bad. It's just like, I actually tried to go back and look. I was like, has he just faced like all the best lefties in baseball? These numbers are so bad. But that wasn't even the case. So I don't know. I don't really know what to make of the Angels. I mean, at what point for a team like the Angels, do you take, do you understand that they're not very good, but you're getting a good matchup? Like, you know, 4.7 runs, implied runs is decent. And then you kind of look up and down this lineup, you're like, Fletcher, no thanks. Calhoun, definitely no thanks against lefty. Upton said about his problems. Pujols is horrible. And then you get like, and then the bottom lineup, you really fall off a cliff. At what point does like a bad, how bad does a pitcher need to be that you roster a bad team against them? I guess that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think, so the time I normally do it is two spots. Sometimes there's still a decent hitter on the bad team that you can just kind of plug and play and not feel like you're giving up too much. Like, you know, I talked about like Ohtani against a righty, like against Jacob Turner last night. I think when it comes to, for stacking purposes, I don't really want to do it in cash games for the most part, because there's just like, or like if your team is that bad, chances are good you've been pretty bad against some bad pitchers at some point. But I do really like it for big tournaments. And, you know, I think that's why I think the Angels were a reasonable play last night. They put up 11 runs, by the way, against the Jacob Turner and company. Turner, I don't know if you noticed this, his ERA now up to a flat 45 on the season. And that's not through one inning. That is, oh no, it is through one inning. Damn it. So 45 from yesterday. Or is it on the season? No, he might have boosted his season-long ERA up that high. Anyways, Turner goes out there. He had one last start, one inning, 8 earned runs. This start, he makes it through the one inning and gives up just the 5 earned runs. So things heading in the right direction for Turner.
Better.
but yeah, so like last night, I think that was a pretty good example. Like you could have run Calhoun. You know, we talked about Ohtani. Upton even got a taste of that action. And, you know, the bad hitters in the bottom of the lineup actually put up numbers too. Not that you would have stacked them. But, yeah, for big tournament purposes, I think you go for it. I think on a small slate, you just take what is being offered to you. So if you're going to plug in some Angels just because they happen to be against one of the bad pitchers here, I think that's fine too. By the way, what a time to be alive for California baseball. Like, just think about the offenses that exist in California right now. You have the Angels and Giants, who are just, like, straight up old man central, big names. Almost like a Japanese team, they remind me of, you know, like Albert right. Pujols is coming to our team. Like, what year is it, though? Because isn't he, like, terrible now? You get this, San Diego, you know, just continuing year after year to just put in straight-up work. Terrible. Like, this year, minus 107, second-worst run differential in all of the major leagues. You head over to the AL. You got Oakland. They've been actually pretty respectable. And again, the Angels, who actually their run score totals aren't that terrible, but you know, they had Mike Trout on their team, and now they don't. So I guess you can make
the Dodgers, buddy. The Dodgers, your first place Dodgers.
The Dodgers too. Good call. They're also
plus 97 run differential. One thing I want to go back to Pujols real quick. Pujols is dead. This guy's career, I would say, is the only hanging around because they got. Let me just look at his contract.
They got a big contract. Don't look.
Oh, yeah, they got another 3 years of this disaster, $24 million a year. They got him through 2021. He has, I read an article the other day that he's been another guy that's just been destroyed by the shift. He just can't do anything else except for pull left-handed, like against lefties. He just pulls left-handed ground balls like over and over and over again. His WRC plus against lefties this year is 65. This is Albert Pujols we're talking about. This guy is, he's a 611 OPS against lefties. Now the BABIP's low, but it's just not going to turn back around. So what a shame too, especially when you're talking about California baseball, to surround maybe the greatest, who arguably might end up being the greatest player ever in Mike Trout, with this group of characters, is really just going to be, it's a story that's not talked about enough. I know people have mentioned it in the past, but this guy is a generational talent and maybe more, and he just has never had another guy. I mean, Ohtani, I guess, was supposed to be the guy. But anyway, all right, let's get on to the late slate. Hit us up with a sponsor. We'll talk about some of these evening games.
Sure, let's talk about FantasyFactor.com. Fantasy Factor is a great place to go and play salary cap games like you're used to, but without all the sharks putting in tons and tons of lineups, especially this time of year, end of baseball season, mid to end of baseball season, I suppose. We can get a lot of grinders putting in tons of lineups. Fantasy Factor has a lot more casual players, people that just put in between like $5 and $100 a night. If that sounds like you, I think they're a great spot to check out. They'll continue running baseball free rolls throughout the summer, and I'm sure they're gearing up for a ton of fun free rolls once September rolls around too. So I'd head on over there, get used to the software in advance of football season, and have fun. FantasyFactor.com.
All right, before we get into the late slate here, but it's like a lawn mowing party. We talked about this a little bit, the lawn mowing thing in the podcast yesterday. I got a lawn mower going outside my house right now. You had the unprecedented lawn. So what's the way to describe? Same lawn mowed 2 days in a row. As a lawn mowing junkie hater like I am, among the best in the business at hating lawnmowers and leaf blowers, that is even one that I've never heard of before.
Well, that's what makes me think that they listen to the podcast and then we're like, Oh, you think one was bad? Get ready, buddy. Look over, just see that riding mower heading back down the hill right towards my house. And just like started dying laughing out loud. So if you did hear the mower, you probably still hear it now. I can only go so far to escape it in my house and still get any sort of reasonable acoustics. But yes, when you're a stay-at-home podcaster, that is
the struggle is real, man.
Sometimes.
All right, let's talk about some of these evening slates. Now I got a question about, I wrote him up last night. What do we make at this point of Luis Severino? So Severino, his numbers in the season are elite. The K numbers have dropped since the beginning of the year. He's still, if you take a bird's eye view of his year, he's been excellent. Among the best pitchers in all of baseball this season when it comes down to war. He's like in top 15 or something like that. 10 strikeouts per nine, low walks. It all looks pretty good. The problem is his recent run has been really, really bad. He got, so against Boston, you can sort of forgive the guy a little bit, but he gets sort of lit up by Boston, seven sure. runs in 5 2/3, only strikes out two, walks three guys. A really problematic game was the one against the Royals. This is after they had traded Moustakas. Not like it matters that much, but I remember this day. This was like the day they were like minus 400 favorites or something like that.
Yeah, well, because we were like, you got to play Severino, easiest play in
the world. Oh, he just was the easiest play in the world. He lets up six runs in 4 1/3 inning against maybe the worst offense in the AL. Only strikes out five. In the game before that, at Tampa Bay, so great park, pretty bad offense, only goes five innings, strikes out eight, but allows six earned runs, four earned runs the game before, three earned runs the game before. He's allowed something like 25 earned runs in his last 29 innings or something like that. Are we concerned that he's possibly just hitting a wall here? I'm especially concerned of like a two strikeout game, a one strikeout game for a guy who really shouldn't be doing that. At what point do we make any consolation here or say that he maybe is just hitting a wall, like in the second full season? Like these numbers to me are somewhat alarming.
Yeah, they're somewhat alarming to me too. The wall thing, you know, that's I guess hard for me to quantify, and like I know that it certainly happens. It certainly has that look to it. Eight home runs given up, by the way, in his last five starts for a guy who had been depressing home runs at an incredibly great rate. That eight home runs in his last five starts is more than he had given up in all of his starts combined prior to that this season. So, yeah, things are definitely not looking good for Severino right now. I think you can't point that out, though, without understanding that you're also getting somewhat of a price discount on him, too. So the question, and this is always the hardest part for me, and I'm curious to know how you handle this as well, which is like, so, yes, you're getting a discount here on a guy that otherwise would cost more.
Yes.
But he wouldn't cost this much if he was actually going to give up five earned runs to start and give up two home runs. You know, right. He would cost like 6,000, right? So, but on the same token, we would just definitely play him if he cost 8,000 or 6,000 too. So, like, who is the real Severino? Is it because with pitching, I don't know. So, like, I guess I compare it to like the NBA or like even the NFL, where like an NFL running back, where like it's not like, when an NFL running back is like a little banged up or things aren't quite right, maybe he still gets 20 carries, but it's 90 yards instead of 130 and a touch, you know? Mm-hmm. So you can kind of still live with it. Pitching, it tends to be like, oh, I'm good. And then I went 1 1/3 and give up eight runs because like I just had an elbow problem the whole time.
Right, then I landed the DL. Like I landed the DL the next day.
Exactly. Or like, and maybe the wide receivers are a better comp there, where pitchers are like wide receivers, where it's like, oops, just kidding. Julio Jones was out there as a decoy and got one target the whole game.
Right.
You know? And that's what I would be concerned about Severino. Like, is there some underlying issue? Because it's basically from all factors. The strikeouts aren't there on a percentage basis, giving up reams of hard contact, giving up tons of runs, obviously not going deep into games as a result. So, yeah, rolling him out there tonight won't feel good. I don't know any other way to say it. He's also he's a minus 254 favorite against arguably the worst pitcher in all of baseball too, against a White Sox team that isn't very impressive either. So I don't know. I think you can still make a case for it. I don't know how good it feels, but I think that's kind of where we're landing right
now. This is always the hardest thing from a projection standpoint to make a determination on, is when there's something wrong. Baseball, like, I tend not to try to do it with hitters really at all, because you know, short of just like very specific injuries, most guys land in the DL. You know, some guys will play hurt and you can make some downgrades. Pitching though, the example you gave is, pitching tends to be fine, and then it falls off a cliff, and then you just find out the guy was hurt, right? That is something that does happen a fair amount in baseball with pitchers. They, you know, they have like this outlier kind of game. My issue with this is like, this is an outlier kind of, I don't know, 2 weeks. And the longer it goes, the more concerns I have. One thing the Yankees have done with some of their other starters is they have really quick hooks on them and they try to get into that bullpen because the bullpen's so good. They have not really done that with Severino. They've run him up to 100 plus pitches, right around that number in the last couple games too. So it's not even like they have short leashes on him. He just hasn't really been all that good. I think right now, because of the track record and the peripherals and just the lack of other really great options on this slate, I think you take and the discount you're getting, I think you just kind of wing and prayer it and say maybe this is the game that he turns it around. Vegas sure thinks he's going to, as a -260 favorite against the White Sox. I think you just have to do it because of the price, and I'm with you that it doesn't feel all that good. After him, though, I mean, you have Kershaw on the slate. He's got his own sort of like, is he the same guy anymore? I'm not totally positive he is. You got Mike Clevinger. Any of these guys stand out to you as reasonable pivots, factoring in price? Like, Clevinger is a little bit more expensive on FanDuel than Severino. He's significantly cheaper on DraftKings, where he's under 10,000. Kershaw is the most expensive pitcher on the slate, I believe. I was trying to click. He's definitely the most expensive pitcher on FanDuel. I was just looking to see if his DraftKings price was around the same way. Do those guys make you feel any better running outside? Yeah, he's 1,000 more on DraftKings. Kershaw is. And then you have Mike Fulton wins against the Washington. Any of those guys stand out to you as possible reasonable pivots, or are you kind of just going to say, I'm just going to bank on the season long numbers for Severino rather than the short term?
No, I think I like Kershaw tonight. If we're going to play the recent game log game, he's coming off 3 straight good starts, 2 against the Brewers, 1 against the Braves, who are a really, really good offense. Or against left-handed pitching anyway, against the Braves. He went out there 7 2/3, 1 run, 8 Ks, no walks. The Braves this season, a top 5 team in terms of WOBA against left-handed pitching. So I think that if you're looking at recent stuff for Kershaw, which I think is like, I don't know. I think it's kind of okay. Well, I think it's okay when you're looking at a guy like Kershaw with such an incredible track record to try and sort for, is this guy going to get back to where he has been in the past? I think with Kershaw, it's like, okay, look at him and say, okay, he's been great in the last 3 starts. It could be that he's just gotten over whatever issues were bothering him in the past. So I am comfortable playing Kershaw, even at the highest price point. I don't know how you feel about it, but I kind of feel like he's safer than Severino. The numbers on the season aren't too dissimilar, even if Kershaw isn't the same guy he's been in the past. He's also, I mean, going up against Oakland, so it's not a phenomenal matchup, but the xFIP is better than Severino. And we're looking at whole season here. The K numbers are better than Severino's, I think. The walk numbers are better.
No, the K numbers are not better, but they're lower for the season. He's kind of settling in at like 9.5 strikeouts per 9. Now, if you take
Severino a hair under 10.
If you do the recent thing, Kershaw is much better. So it's like, it's where do you kind of factor this in? Because Kershaw's season long numbers aren't a great test because he was just kind of on and off the DL for stints at the beginning of the year. So
A's roughly league average against left-handed pitching, so you know, nothing to write home about either way there. I think if I'm just playing the safety game, I'm going to take Kershaw, and I'll give up a little bit of upside on, you know, Severino maybe being slightly better, and then I'll just, you know, or a slightly better value, I guess, and I'll just kind of live with it, I think.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think I'm going to have a hard time paying such a premium for Kershaw here, only because the numbers where he's the especially his DraftKings price, it's close to 13,000. That's trending toward like you need to have like Chris Sale kind of stuff, Max Scherzer kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and Kershaw, I just do not put him in that same class as those guys anymore. He's good. He's very good. I don't think he's coming back to this like 11K.
Yeah, I guess Severino is only 9,400 on FanDuel. Like that's,
yeah, I think that's pretty rough. 1,600 less. I mean, you know, you're looking at more than 10% less or something like that, 12 or 13% less, something like that, than Kershaw. This is where it's really, really close. Like, but again, you made a good point.
It's also worth noting, too, that Oakland, being a much better team than the White Sox when they have Lucas Giolito on the mound, Severino, a much bigger favorite here. I mean, I think our system has them separated by 5 fantasy points on FanDuel. That just seems wrong to me. Like, I don't really know any other way to put it. But at 1,600 cheaper, that's for some reason in my mind, I was getting the DraftKings and FanDuel prices conflated. I think that's actually a lot more reasonable than, you know, maybe you just have to bite the bullet and take the savings.
I had the same feeling that you had, that it seemed like too big of a spread on their projections. That I did think that Kershaw was too far underneath Severino. I don't know. There's some chance we're probably a little high in Severino's case and a little low on Kershaw's. I was opening up some of our back-end database to take a look at where our numbers are. My guess is we're probably a little high. I think we could probably feel safe about downgrading at least Severino's K's. Like, if he was up over 10 per nine right now, I would feel totally fine bringing him down to like the 9.75 range, just because of the recent. And if this is the game where he just turns it back on and goes full ham on these guys and strikes out like 11 and 7 innings, I won't feel too bad about having reverted it for this one instance, because I think that the recent track record has been something to the thing where you can start to downward guide a guy when it does look like he's kind of coming off the rails. A couple other guys I want to make mention of: Mike Clevinger is here. Clevinger's an interesting guy. I mean, he came out at the start of the last year in the bullpen, then they turned him into a starter kind of slowly, did that. It was almost like he was working his way into like what it meant to be a starter in the majors, because he walked a lot of guys but struck out a lot of guys as well. He's kind of changed his approach, where he's actually striking out less guys this season, right around a batter per nine, but he's also reduced the walks significantly. Like, he's taken off a walk and a half per nine, which has allowed him to go something like 6.33 innings on average per start this year. Like, that through 22 starts for a guy like him, those actually are excellent inning numbers for really any starter for over a course of a season. I think he's an interesting play. He's more expensive than Severino on FanDuel. I don't really want to consider it there, but he's significantly cheaper than the other two guys that we mentioned here on DraftKings, where he's only 9,500. Could you see him kind of working in to cash game plays? I think we started off the year kind of having him as a 10K per nine guy. We've kind of reduced that because I don't think that's going to be the case, but I had bumped up his innings because it does seem real that he's able to go longer in games.
Yeah, I don't think Clevinger is a bad play. I think it just, I'm also like not super, super excited about it. And that just speaks to how I feel about this late slate in general. Like, you know, Severino's got question marks. Kershaw's got question marks. Clevinger's got question marks. All these guys don't feel like excellent plays to me, and I also just don't even know if I'm going to go cheap on pitching. I don't even know what I'm going to do to spend up after the fact. I think he's definitely in that mix, that small group of guys I could consider, and none of it looks particularly exciting to me.
I was correct about us being too high in Severino's K's, by the way. I reduced him by a decent amount of K's. His projection is going to come down a little bit. I think he'll still be there on FanDuel. It's probably going to end up being closer on DraftKings simply because he is a little bit expensive there. All right, let's get into some of these stacks. There are some real bad pitchers going here. When I talked about the worst pitcher on the slate, I had forgotten that Giolito was going because I was going to bring up Heath Fillmyer. But Giolito, these two guys, between the two of them, there's a couple different ways to stack. Which way are you turning first when it comes to stacking on the late slate?
I mean, if we're just going to get into who's the worst pitcher contest, just hand me Lucas Giolito, yeah, and then you can walk out of the room. I mean, the guy has the worst xFIP among qualified pitchers in the majors this season, almost touching six, which would really be something. I mean, to the fact that he stayed on the mound for 120 innings this season with a flat six ERA, flat six xFIP, like, that is absolutely startling. More than five walks per nine, Doug. How do the managers do it? How do you sit in the dugout and just watch that happen?
Well, what are their other options? I mean, think about it.
I have a good answer for you. Do you know who the second and third worst xFIP guys in the majors are?
Well, it's probably like Shields and Ronaldo Lopez.
You got it, too.
Yeah. Only because we were on the White Sox theme. Yeah.
The White Sox just rolling out the trifecta, the three worst xFIP pitchers among qualified pitchers. Now, again, part of that, the among qualified pitchers caveat holds there, because there's simply just plenty of bad pitchers, but they're on teams that have the sense to not leave the guys on the mound and right, just do anything, right? A bullpen by committee, like, they'll figure something out. The White Sox don't have that luxury, apparently. So they just leave out these completely horrendous pitchers for however long, until I guess they feel sore and complain. Also worth noting, Hector Santiago, if you take away the qualified pitchers thing and just do a 70-inning threshold, Hector Santiago would be second worst in the majors. So now we're up to four distinct White Sox on that list. It's just pretty amazing. But, yeah, I think Carlos Rodon, by the way, 16th on the list. So that is really, really something. That's like, I don't know if you ever played Baseball Simulator 1000, Doug, but bear with me if you haven't. It's like in a video game, if you make a team and you're like, we're just going to give all of their stats to the batters, right, and just see what happens, and just like let all the pitchers be the guys who throw 60 miles an hour and get tired after two innings. That is the equivalent of the White Sox this season. Truly, truly just a historic run by them. That's five pitchers
and they add up to a negative war between all of them. That is just congratulations. Yeah. That's very, very difficult to do.
All this to say, the Yankees in great spot, in a great spot here. Gardner, Stanton, Didi, Hicks, Gleyber, really Greg Bird, even if he's in the six hole, I think it's fine because he's coming pretty cheap on FanDuel and DraftKings as well in their 4,000. If you're not going to spend up a pitching, like if you're going to kind of avoid, let's say you're going to avoid Severino and Kershaw because like you just think they're a little too expensive, I think rostering these Yankee guys is just completely reasonable. Just based on it's a great park. The case against Giolito has been long and not that fruitful, but he's completely horrible. So I think the Yankees by and large are in a great spot. The other guy I was going to mention here, and you're right, Giolito is worse than this guy. But the Cubs get Heath Philmeyer. He's spent some time in the bullpen for the Royals. And there's actually one more guy I want to mention here too, but spent some time in the bullpen. It's always find these bullpen numbers to be hilarious. Like when you spend half your starts or half your games, not all your innings, have been in the bullpen and your peripherals still stink. It's a really, really bad sign for you that you just are not that good of a pitcher. Again, if you're brought in leverage spots where you're supposed to succeed and you can't do it. Now his ERA is sub 4, but the xFIP is really right around 5. He's got like a 1.2 to 1 K to walk ratio. So it's not Jacob Turner where it's the 0.5 to 1 or something like that. K to walk ratio or something like that. Where he's just where you're talking about historically bad, but Philmeyer still bad. I think you can stack the Cubs outfield here. Rizzo, Schwarber, Happ, because outfield is a place where it's a little thin on these slates and on this evening slate. Hayward has turned things around too. So I think you're in Hayward, Schwarber, and Happ. I think it's totally fine against Heath Philmeyer. One guy, a question about the system really likes the Brewers right now. They get a guy who I think is Brett Kennedy. He's making his first start in the majors for the Padres. They are projected for runs. Do you ever? You know, one of those old cliches is like it's sometimes hard to tell what like a new pitcher is going to do, and every team's fan base thinks that their team stinks against the new pitcher, even though that's just kind of made up. Are you fine kind of like using Vegas in this sense to really just inform whether or not we're going to play a guy?
Yeah, so when you're thinking about playing the Brewers against the Padres here, I think it's like sometimes a little bit tricky when you talk about these teams that have kind of flat production. Now, the Brewers aren't as bad as some teams at this, but when I'm trying to think about who I want to play from the Brewers, it's not like the Yankees, right? Like when the Yankees have a big line right now, you can pretty safely assume that a decent amount of that comes from the fact that they just have Giancarlo Stanton batting in the middle of their lineup. And so even taking Stanton as a one-off, if you don't like some of the other Yankees around him, oftentimes makes sense. So when it comes to the Brewers, it's not like the line is through the roof. And it's not like, you know, you simply have to play these guys or you're giving away like an 11-run line in Texas or something like that. Like the reason we're running out Seattle in that's kind of a similarly not super inspiring, not very top-heavy offense. Not to say that I would avoid playing these guys, but I also just wouldn't go jumping in with 2 feet just because I see a not-so-great pitcher on the mound. Now, if I can get guys, you know, like Thames looks like a value to me. Braun, just another DFSR favorite. You know, he looks like our system is pulling him up right now. His stock is probably still too cheap on FanDuel. So I think there are some guys you can definitely pull out here. But when I looked at the slate and when I was composing my song about why this slate sucks earlier today, this is exactly why, right? Like I'm getting speculative pitching, and then my reward is playing a bunch of Brewers. Like, wow, good job by me. I've really gotten away with something today, you know? Like, and now everyone's going to have that similar problem. It's not like there's some secret team that I don't see that everyone's going to tap into. But yeah, it's looking like a pretty rough slate in general.
I think it's mostly they're just mispriced on FanDuel. They're too cheap. Like Moustakas is 3,000. I think one thing about Shaw is that with the Moustakas trade, they move Shaw over to second base, and second base is just a very thin offensive position in general. So it like helps to move.
Yeah, it's true.
It does help to move his bat over there, where he's like not the best hitter in the world, like the 800 OPS guy or whatever. But when you compare him to other second basemen, that's where he just...
Yeah, 800 OPS at second base gets you to Cooperstown.
That's what I mean. Like, he's looking a lot better. Because if you look at the player pool at second base, it's a real bad list. You get into like the Jonathan VRs and like Devin Travis is really quick, and you just don't, it's not always really where you want to be. And then guys like Javier Baez are just too expensive. So that's kind of where I land with Milwaukee. I'm not as bullish on them on DraftKings where they're not as cheap, but I think that I'm willing to take it against a rookie pitcher, mostly because I think we're getting decent value just kind of up and down their lineup. And there are kind of a deep lineup too. So like you do spread out some of those runs because now you get down the Thames all the way down like the seventh spot or whatever. That's a, don't know, a lot of that production is spread out, and that makes that implied run line not look as great. All right, let's get out of here. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com is the site. DFSR.com/MLB will get you started. You can read all my lawnmower analysis. I'm going to do a long post about just lawnmowers in the background. That will go up on the site later.
Sounds amazing.
Also have, in addition to that, have some NFL content that went up yesterday about Vegas lines and running back projections. So you can go check that out as well. DFSR.com/MLB will get you started. Well, Buddy, we'll be back again Friday talking more MLB.
Let's go.
Enjoy your Wednesday.
Yeah.